Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a return guest, somebody who I really enjoyed speaking with on his last visit. This is the beginning of school year, so I think it's a perfect time to speak with an educator who understands on a deeper level the state of our education system, and I think also what it needs to be. So it's always about solutions on the show, and I'm pleased and honored to welcome back our guest, Mr. Carl Streitel. He's a retired teacher. He taught English and finance for 19 years and now works as a freelance editor and tutor. He can be contacted at ksediting@opayq.com and via his Substack, The Mental Lab, at thementallab.substack.com. And Mr. Streitel, I'm really happy to have you back, and I thank you again for your time, because I think you add a different take to our conversation. And, you know, when you think about the school system, it seems very rigid these days. And I'm not so sure it is what I remembered it to be. In your article, you wrote, "Public schools have no respect for the students or their parents." And in it, you talk about being excited to go to school. Well, I fit that. I used to love going to school. It would be best time when September rolled around because it was a lot of fun. And from what you described, doesn't seem like that's the case anymore. So one, let's revisit why you went into teaching and how you find that it's different now.
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to thank you for having me back on. I sincerely appreciate that. And it's good to know that I didn't completely torpedo your show after my previous appearance. So thank you again. I do appreciate that and having the opportunity to speak with both you and your audience. So first, I'll answer your initial question about how I got into teaching. And long story short, I had an experience in high school where I had the opportunity to actually teach some older students, I'll say adults at that point, even though I was not yet a legal adult myself, in a veterans program at a local community college as a result of the fact that my mom was a teacher there. And so I was teaching a computer class to these veterans, and it was just a remedial class basically to introduce them to computers. This was in the late 90s at the time. And so they were learning things as basic as how to use a mouse. So it was a really fantastic experience for me because I was always very interested in technology and computers, and I had been tinkering with them since I was a kid. And it was my first foray into teaching other people about something that I love. And it was very, very fulfilling, not only for me, but when I could see that amazing glint of knowledge and excitement and euphoria on the face of these, in some cases, people who were twice, maybe even three times my age at the time, I realized, wow, this is truly a powerful, powerful calling. And that's when I first felt that initial tug to get involved in education and to help people find ways to educate themselves. Because obviously, I'm a big proponent of autodidactism, you know, being able to self-teach. I think that's a very, very important element. But no matter what, we're always learning from other people, right? Even if it's just every day around us, we learn something. Or when we go to a textbook or we watch a lecture or we sit in a physical classroom, we're always learning from other people. So even though we can teach ourselves, we are getting that information from other people. So sorry that I said long story short, but so long story somewhat long, that led me to go into teaching and education when I went to college. And so I got my bachelor's degree as well as my master's degree in education. And as you pointed out, I then taught for 19 years in a public school, and I have been trying to atone for that since. So that's my brief story. And I know you asked that other question too about what is different, what I've noticed. I don't know if you wanted me to go into that or if you wanted me to pause there for a moment, because I know that was a bit of speaking on my part.
That's quite all right. I think it set a nice foundation and tone to segue into this is why you went into it. This was your love. This was the spark. And I feel it too, as a teacher, as a physician, you're a teacher to your student, I'm sorry, to your patients. And I did teach in college as well. There's nothing like seeing that light bulb go off and people being able to take what you taught them and run with it. So with that in mind, what's different now? I mean, it just seems to be what you just described is not what's going on.
No, not at all. And I think that there are several elements to it. I'll note that I think the rise of bureaucracy has a lot to do with it. And in that category, I would include things like standardized testing and other measures that, you know, various people have called for and have supported for a variety of reasons. I think that that's a big part of it. But I'll also point out the compulsory nature of schooling. And obviously, this predates extensively my involvement in school. You know, this, we're going back to the late 19th century at this point when we talk about compulsory schooling in the United States. But I think that that's the key element to it. So even though that wasn't a direct change while I was teaching, I think that that's something that can't really be ignored in the current system, because I do think that that's the foundational element of a lot of the problems that we do see cropping up in the system today, and that are only exacerbated by the increase in bureaucracy and the increase in different interests, shall we say, in that system. So we have things like teachers unions, right? They have a particular interest. And we have the administrators who have a particular interest. We have state representatives who have a particular interest, parents, students. And oftentimes all of these groups, community members, excuse me, all of these groups are working at cross purposes to each other. And I think that that's one of the big elements too, that as we see more and more of these calls for standardized testing and people really asking, you know, especially community member wise, people asking for, hey, show me the results, show me the results. I mean, we hear that so often. When we have that push, I think that that causes a lot of problems, because what that does is, and I saw this firsthand, is it starts to then mold the curriculum. It starts to mold what's being done in the school, which isn't necessarily in the best interest of students. And I know from, you know, again, from my own experience, most of what we did during the day, I would classify as particularly wasteful. But especially when we got into test preparation, you know, we were doing test prep, thankfully, not nearly as much as some other districts about which I've heard. But nonetheless, there was still test prep, and we still had to take time out of other, you know, teaching and learning endeavors in order to deal with these tests. And that, again, pushes education in a direction that's not student-oriented. The students were not calling for these tests. And so in my mind, if the students and their parents aren't asking for this, then quite simply, we shouldn't be doing it. And I, you know, I'm sure there's going to be some pushback, because there are plenty of people in the community who say, well, listen, it's my tax dollars. I want to see some results. And I understand that. And so let's go back to the compulsion then. Okay. So let's take tax dollars out of it then. You know, would you still care? Then would that still be a major concern of yours? You know, do you ask your neighbors, hey, what are the test scores for your kids? Right. Well, it's none of your business, because you're not paying for them, you know, if they go to a private school or something like that. So again, I just wanted to point out, I think that would be my sort of two-prong answer, would be the rise of the bureaucracy, and couple that with the, you know, over century-old compulsory aspect of the school system, and you have quite a perfect storm in terms of amazingly divergent curriculum and results from what parents and students seem to actually want. And in my discussions with them and in my experience, 19 years in the classroom, I can tell you, they didn't want most of, you know, what we were doing, yet we plowed ahead in the quote unquote name of helping students. Well, again, I think it's, you know, it's all part and parcel of that bureaucracy when we think we know better for them than they do, especially at the high school level where I taught.
You know, when you think about bureaucracy, I never have a good, you know, it's not a good connotation to me.
It's no.
Lowest common denominator, every size fits all. And I can apply that to healthcare with evidence-based medicine, which has nothing to do with healthcare, but it's just checking boxes, filling prescriptions, making diagnoses and then not thinking about how you not even go down that path, but keep people healthy. To me, it's the same principle. You started off by talking about basically critical thinking, where you teach somebody how to continue to learn. It doesn't seem to me that that is a skill that exists anymore. I mean, we had to have a thesis, write a paper, that's my history, write a paper with the point and counterpoint and prove it. And, you know, you could be right or wrong, but if you had a great argument, it made sense, right? And you had to think about it. I don't think that's the same if you're, you know, circling bubbles. And ultimately, if you do score well, does that really translate anymore to being able to be a functional member of society, open your own business, have skills that allow you to be flexible and not rigid? I mean, just because you score well doesn't mean it's real, does it?
No, and I think that that's such an important point, because I was actually just speaking about this with my wife the other day, that, you know, so much of what we get, and I'll just use the shorthand school for government school, although I would apply this to really any school system that is traditional, that sort of follows the government school model. I don't really have a lot of positive things to say either, but nonetheless, we'll say school, that, you know, when we really get down to brass tacks and we think about it, from kindergarten through 12th grade, how many of us could pass even a basic test on most of the subjects that we took? I know I don't feel too confident in my own ability in most of those subjects, outside of English, probably, because that's, you know, that's what I do on a daily basis now as an editor. But outside of that, so how much of that learning was truly learning? I mean, if we're only learning for a test, and as you pointed out, especially for just a multiple choice test, but I would say even any sort of test, all we're really doing is learning ephemerally, right? We're just learning for a particular moment in time to pass this one assessment, whatever form that happens to take. And we're not learning for utility. We're not learning for life. And again, I think that that's an indictment that I would level on any traditional system, right? Anything that's basically set up like a government school. Because again, I mean, we can look around us. All we have to do is be a little bit introspective for a moment and say, yeah, like, let's be honest. That was my experience. That was probably your experience. That was most everybody's, because we don't need, you know, most of that material. And in order to get all that material, though, and to only learn for that particular point in time, that test, so that I can pass it, well, what does that do, right? What do we actually see are the byproducts of that type of a system? Well, number one, it absolutely kills the love of learning, right? That is an innate part of every single human being. And I don't need to prove that, because all we need to do is look at a young child on a playground or outside in a field, right? Look at a 4 or 5 year old, basically anywhere. I mean, there is just an innate love of learning with which each of us is born. And all school does over time, as a result of that system that I just described, is absolutely demolish and undermine that innate love of learning, to the point where, as you and I both know, and again, probably everyone listening knows as well, you look at the average high school student dragging his or her feet into school every day. I mean, you know, there aren't too many people still skipping to get to high school. So, you know, why is that? What changes between the age of 5 and the age of 18? And I know we delved into this a little bit last time I was on your program, but I would say, well, what happens is school, right? What happens is that compulsory system that doesn't respect people as individuals and treats them basically like cogs in a machine that, you know, for the furtherance of the system itself, for the furtherance of teachers like me, for the furtherance of the state legislators, for the furtherance of the principals, but not for the furtherance of true lifelong learning. And I think that's truly, I mean, that's something that we should all be able to lament and you know, if we could break away from the system for even a moment and say, you know what, if I were going to design a way to torture kids, this is exactly, you know, could you design something better than the current government school system? And on the contrary, if I wanted to design a way that is based on how people actually learn, it would be essentially 180 degrees different from what we see right now. And I think, thankfully, that's what we're starting to see in some of the alternative models, like a lot of the micro school models, and certainly what people do with homeschooling and the varieties that we see in education. We're actually trying to reach people in a way that they learn. And I just wanted to mention, I had written an article a few months ago, because you had spoken a moment ago about motivation, right? And people being motivated to learn. And, you know, there have been many studies done about motivation. And I came upon one that I thought was pretty neat, because it laid out three different elements that these authors argued are necessary for motivation, specifically intrinsic motivation they're talking about. And the three, they were the ABCs of motivation. So it was autonomy, belonging, and competence. And so autonomy, pretty simple, right? That we feel like we have some control over what we're doing. Well, how much control does the average student feel he or she has in school, especially by the time they get to high school, right? I mean, yeah. I know when I was in high school, I felt like I had like negative, if it were possible, control over what I was doing. Belonging, the sense that what you're doing serves a larger purpose than yourself, right? The sense that you're involved in something that has value beyond yourself. Okay, well, let's do some more worksheets, right? Because we all know that those have value, especially when they end up in, you know, the teacher's trash can after all the grading is done, because, right, that's what the system is predicated on, is, hey, let's get a mark at the top of the paper and then shove it in my locker or the garbage can, you know, immediately after getting it back, right? There's no value, as you pointed out. It's not like being involved in some kind of entrepreneurial project where we're actually doing something that people want us to do that has value to them, not just to furtherance of a system. And then the C was competence, meaning that you're constantly pushed to your current level of competence. So there's that constant push, where you're not, you know, we're not giving you something that's too hard for you to do, but we're not giving you something that's too easy as well. And I think, you know, for all of the perhaps negative aspects of kids playing video games, I think this is one, I think actually all three of those, but especially that last one, is something that video games do really well, right? We have different levels of difficulty that you can choose and that you can change in a video game. Whereas in school, as you pointed out, I like to say it's the one size fits none, right? I mean, I taught remedial classes, I taught quote unquote average classes, I taught honors level classes, and in every single one of them, it was teach to the middle. And, you know, the kids who are really advanced basically just go off and get bored. And the kids who can't keep up sort of do the same thing. They get lost and they get bored. And I reach, you know, 50% of the kids in the middle. So yeah, I thought that I just wanted to mention those because I thought that that dovetailed very nicely with what you had mentioned about motivation in particular. And to point out that, and I hope, you know, your audience can think about their own experiences if they were in public schools or even a traditional system. How many of those three did you feel on a daily basis in, you know, your educational experience? Like I said, for me, I'd be hard pressed to remember a lot of days where I felt those three.
That's a really profound way to think about it. I really feel I was blessed because it was a system that they expected more from you. Mm-hmm. Like there wasn't this is the least of what we expect from you. If you can't get it, then here's extra work, but we know you can do it. We have faith in you, and your parents were involved. And it was this, maybe it was coddled, I don't know, but it was this expectation that you could exceed what the parameters were. And you were expected to do it. Didn't matter what you looked like, if you're boy or girl, whatever. It was, you're here in this school and we know you can achieve and we expect it. I think it's the expectation, don't you? And let's take a break because I want to ask that question again when we come back, because I don't think there's expectations of anybody anymore. It's just, I don't even know. So let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Carl Streitel. And before the break, I was asking a question about expectation. Right now, it's so parsed and hyphenated, and everybody's a victim, and you can't do because of what you look like or what your socioeconomic status is. It's the lack. It's not abundant. Before, when I went to school, I don't care who you went, it was a weird school, right? There's only 13 people in my graduating class, and I was there for 12 years, so I had a different perspective. but everybody was expected to succeed. You might be good at art, you might be good at sports, but everybody was given the ability and the push to be as good in other things which you didn't feel comfortable with. So from the standpoint of where we are now, don't you feel, or I should ask the question objectively, is there a movement towards putting value on kids in a way that's surfacey? What you look like, where you come from, what language you speak, those are all given values now. And it's like a race to the bottom of who can be the biggest victim.
Sure. And I think we see that, of course, in society at large. And, you know, I don't know in particular which started first, the chicken or the egg. You know, was it more a societal issue, a school issue? I think that they, you know, run in tandem quite often, especially these days. But I'll point out in terms of your overall question, I'll mention too that I think, again, this is sort of a systemic issue in a traditional system of education, which is dependence. And, you know, this, of course, also connects nicely to society where, as you pointed out, very few people feel the need to do things for themselves these days. And even if they do, there's often a nice little safety net underneath them, you know, whether it's, well, you know, don't worry, I don't have to pay my student loans because they're just going to be forgiven, or, you know, hey, I don't really have to worry about learning any adult skills. I can just move into my parents' basement. And, you know, this whole idea that we see, but it's been in schools, I think, longer than in the dependence aspect, that is, has been in schools much longer than it has been in society at large. I will say that because I know the dependence is something I noticed even when I was a brand new teacher in the early, you know, at the beginning of the millennium here. And I think that to me is one of the, if not the primary issue and one of the primary differences between a traditional system and, as I continue to use the term, an alternative system, whatever that happens to be. But I'll just give you an example in a moment. But I just want to speak about that dependence idea briefly, which is, you know, what I saw in the classroom, and again, I think from most of our experiences who went through a more traditional system, which is you are basically reliant on the adults in your school for essentially everything. And again, as a teacher, I fell into this far too often. You know, I was more than happy to be the sage on the stage. I was more than happy to be the authority figure. I was more than happy to be the disciplinarian. And, you know, it made me feel good. It made me feel good when I could have a nice quiet classroom and everyone would listen to what I was saying. And they waited, you know, patiently for me to give them directions. And that was a big part of my identity at the time. And now I look back on that and it makes me absolutely ashamed. And, you know, if I could go back and change anything, that would be one of the first things that I would want to change, you know, in my entire life was the fact that I contributed to that dependence in students. But, right, I mean, you hear the bells literally telling you when to stand up and when to sit down. You have to ask permission to use a bathroom. I mean, come on, everybody. Is that treating somebody with any sort of humanity? Is that doing anything but telling that person that you belong to us, right? That you have no, you can't even control, you know, when and where you're allowed to use a restroom without asking. And I mean, we can go down the list, but I don't want to belabor that. We're all familiar with how the system creates that dependence because most of us went through it. We're so reliant on the teachers. So I'll just give you an example of what the alternative looks like though. So I've spoken to many people and I've read this book about Acton Academy. It's ACTON, Acton Academy. And they do have several schools around the country and each academy is independently run. So even though they have the quote unquote like Acton Academy name and model, the entrepreneurs who run these schools do get to choose, you know, basically like their own hours and things like that. But anyway, in Acton Academy, it's all student-centered. The students literally make all the decisions. They have morning meetings and afternoon meetings every single day where the students sit in these circles. And one of the nice parts is when you don't have, you know, 2,000 kids in a school, like Dr. George, like your experience with 13 kids, it's a heck of a lot easier, right? And it's a heck of a lot easier to not fall through the cracks and to be treated like a human being. And I'll use forced in a good way, to be forced to have a voice and to develop that voice and to develop your independence, because you are a valued member of this community. And that's exactly what it is. So anyway, they have these meetings and they basically vote on everything. Now, I'm not a big fan of democracy in a lot of instances, but I think it's a heck of a lot better than just telling everybody what to do because a state legislator says, hey, this is what we're going to do, you know, for every school district in the country or in the county. So they have, they discuss the rules. That's the first thing they do at the beginning of every year. And they can revisit those rules anytime they want to and change them if they find that something isn't working. And by they, again, I mean the students, the kids. They can be like 5 or 6 years old and be involved in this process, right? Because they can think for themselves, they can start to understand what's fair and what isn't. And when something doesn't work, they realize it real quickly. They don't need an adult to step in and say, hey, you know what? This is going to be a bad idea. Just trust me, right? Like 5 years from now, you're going to really rue the day that you came up with this rule. No, I mean, they see that immediately. I interviewed a student who is in an Acton Academy. His parents actually run the Acton Academy in Tennessee. And I think he's 11 or 12 years old. And he told me exactly this story where while he was gone on a trip, excuse me, I guess the other people, the other kids in the school came up with some rule that was pretty ridiculous. And so he came back and, you know, they realized almost immediately, they said, you know what, this is not working. Like, we better do something about this. And they did. And that's what those students are doing on their own without adult intervention. When students go to the adults for help and Acton Academy, you know what the adults do? They don't give them answers. They ask questions. That's all that they're allowed to do. They have to ask questions and that's it. So the students, the onus is on them to go out and find these answers with the adults there as guides and obviously, you know, to make sure things are safe. But other than that, it's on the students to develop their own autonomy, their own learning, and to do so in a safe, supportive environment. And so to your point about expectations, like let's just compare those two versions, right? Acton Academy and even your own experience, Dr. George, with a traditional system. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is night and day. You cannot get any less respectful in one and any more respectful in the other in terms of expectations of human beings and what they're capable of. And I think it is a true disservice to all students who go through traditional systems to be treated that way and to have that, not only that love of learning that I spoke about earlier, but just a sense of humanity and independence that, yes, I am a capable person who can do this, completely and utterly undermined at every step in the traditional system. And the fact that 85% or 83% of the kids in this country still go through that, I think is that's the national emergency.
I would agree. I think we're going to take a break in a few seconds, but I want to start off the conversation with the mental health aspect. I don't believe that was ever so enhanced when I was going through school, even up to the last maybe 10 years. It's just become the focal point. It's about mental health 24/7. And if there isn't any, they're almost creating it by an environment where it's just harped on. And if you're an individual, you feel good about yourself, if you want to be, you know, let people know that you like yourself, apparently that's not a great thing and people come for that. So let's take our second break because I think we're on a really good path to understanding what's out there. I didn't even know that academy existed. That's amazing. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution.
If you missed the show, you can catch it on drlainagorge.com, iTunes, Spotify, and a host of multimedia platforms. You can follow her on Living in the Solution on Telegram and Living in the Solution on Facebook. Subscribe and share it with your friends. You're listening to Dr. Elena George, Advocate for Living in the Solution.
Welcome back to Living in the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Carl Streitel, and you can go to his website, mentalhealthlab.substack.com. And before the break, we make a really Justin, I had no idea what it was out there, that there are avenues that parents and students can go through that help them grow and make them, I think, more resilient and not be a victim of what you can't do. So my question is money the main thing that's causing this problem? I mean, the property taxes are given out, all the money that's floating out there seems to be fueling the same system. Is the system that you just described, is that based as a private completely, or is there any public money going into it?
And you're asking about Acton Academy in particular?
Yes, I am.
Sure. To my understanding, no, it's completely privately funded. Now, I will add a caveat to that because, of course, in many states, you have either, you know, some combination of vouchers and or ESAs, educational savings accounts, like in Florida, for example, and Arizona, I know are two states that do educational savings accounts. So, you know, in a technical way, like I like to be technical about these things, I would say they still can take government money because, of course, people who are using vouchers or people who are using ESAs, that's still partially taxpayer dollars. But in states where those don't exist, they don't necessarily have to, of course. Then people would just be paying their own tuition. Then it would just be private. So, I mean, like so many other things, right? When the government gets involved, like it's hard to, you know, disentangle all the government tentacles that are involved in there. But I mean, it's not technically paid for only with property taxes. It would be at least partially privately funded.
Okay. And you, at the beginning of the show, we talked about all of these interests that work at outcomes from each other. What happened to the power of the parent? Because ultimately, just like the healthcare system, it's for the doctors and the patients. The education system should be for the students and their parents. How do the parents lose so much power in this system, do you think?
That's a great question. I think that I would go back to the money. Like you had just mentioned a moment ago, and I can circle back to that in a second. And I'm going to beat the drum once again for compulsion. That, I mean, if we didn't have the compulsory aspect of school and the compulsory funding for those schools, then the parents would be absolute kings and queens, like they are in every other market-based decision they make on a daily basis, right? I mean, can you imagine, you know, what the state of groceries would be if it looked like, you know, the way that schools are treated and funded, right? If we all had to buy certain groceries, and even if we didn't like those, even if we opted for something else, we still had to pay for the other like crappy groceries. So, you know, of course, we'd end up with junky groceries and, you know, things that people just said, well, you know, I'm paying for it anyway, so I guess I'll do this. And so I think that those two elements have truly helped to just exacerbate the undermining of parents' ability and students' own abilities to have that sense of autonomy and to be able to have a voice. Because obviously, when you're paying for something anyway, regardless of whether you want to use it or not, then right, where do you have the power? Right? You don't. I mean, literally, you have zero power. You can go complain to the school board and stuff, but again, they don't even have to listen to you. Right? I mean, it's not like they're your representatives in the sense of an attorney who you're hiring. They're like every other elected official in that they can listen to you or not. And the only consequence for them is, well, they might lose an election. And then they're going to be replaced by somebody who, guess what, is going to continue property taxes. So, you know, what did we really gain? And, you know, I'll give you an example from my own area here. I remember a couple of years ago when there was a school board election, there were a lot of people in my area with a bunch of yard signs that said, stop the woke agenda. And then there was the candidate's name on the sign, right? So that was his, you know, his whole platform basically was, hey, let's do this. Okay, great, fine. I'm not in favor of any of that kind of stuff, especially not if it's forced on people. But it goes to the larger point of, okay, well, if you like that, that message, I should say, then fine. Like, you can vote for this guy. But number one, like, there's no guarantee that he's going to do that, that he's even going to be able to do that. And guess what? You're still going to be paying no matter what, right? Whether he's successful or not. So, like, as a parent, that's not a lot of power, right? That you can have one vote for somebody who might even think about doing this, might be able to do it. And even if he isn't successful, you still have to continue to pay. So, right, as long as there's that compulsory aspect of the system, then parents don't have a prayer of having any say. Whereas, let's take that Acton Academy again, or I can throw out some other names, you know, Discovery Learners Academy and Path of Life or Prenda, all these different models where if you don't like what's going on in that school as a parent or as a student, you can stop giving them money tomorrow. Right? You don't have to wait to keep your fingers crossed and hope that the right people get into office and that they actually do something and that they can. Nope. You take 100% of your money away from that school tomorrow if you wanted to. In the same way that, you know what, if you don't like the fact that Netflix has commercials and you don't want to pay, you know, the higher rate to not have them, you don't have to wait 4 years or, you know, pray that, oh my gosh, well, I hope Harris or I hope Trump will do something about Netflix. No, guess what? You go on the website and you click cancel and there you go. And then you can decide what to do after that. So, right, in the same way that these private alternatives have to respond immediately to parents and students and their actual needs and their actual desires, right? And by immediately, I mean that. I'm not being hyperbolic, right? That they, I mean, I think Acton Academy as well sends out a weekly survey for parents and students to get their feedback so that they can make changes, again, that quickly. Wow. What public school can make changes even within a year? I mean, we had like a 3-year textbook approval process for at our school. I mean, you know, it's like trying to turn around the Titanic. So I think that, you know, to the my very, very lengthy answer to your question is that compulsory aspect and the two prongs to the compulsion, the compulsion of students being forced to go to school and the compulsion of everyone in this particular area being forced to pay for that school.
It's that force, or that coercion that seems to be the underpinning for what you're describing. And I'm all about being able to pursue your own gifts and talents and also taking personal responsibility. And from what you describe, personal responsibility is totally stripped out of this. And I think it promotes all sorts of, okay, I can't do anything, so let's just not have any change without any, there's no pushback, in other words, because why bother? What you just described, it's kind of frustrating. I certainly wouldn't want to be in a system like that. But ultimately, the show is about, you know, how we can find solutions. I'm going to take a break, but I want to find out, these schools, are they accessible across the country? Is it only part of the country? Where can parents start this journey towards freedom? Because it's what you're describing. So on that note, let's take our last break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Carl Stridell. And I've never heard of these schools. I was curious to know, are they across the country? Can anybody look this up and get their child into it if it's in their environment? Or can they create their own?
Yeah, fantastic question. Yeah, and obviously, I'm with you, Dr. George. One of the reasons, as I mentioned last time I was on, that I love your show is that you are solutions oriented. And I think that's the important part, so that, you know, people have made it this far, you know, 35, 40 minutes in, and they're not completely depressed by the state of things, which that's okay. You can be depressed, and I think you should be, but there are many, many lights at the end of the tunnel. Unlike a lot of other government programs where, you know, people want to throw their hands up and say, oh, well, who's going to take care of the roads, smart guy? You know, it always, for some reason, has to come back to the roads because they're so great already. But right, we see there are actual solutions out there right now that people with which they can engage. So we don't have to speculate about, you know, Libertopia or anything like that. It's like, no, these things are out there. So let me get to the specifics. So yes, some of them are nationwide. Like I mentioned, Acton Academy, that's again, A-C-T-O-N. You can look them up. They have a school finder on their website. Prenda, which is P-E-R-N-D-A, is also nationwide. They have schools in a variety of areas. And I think, you know, there are several others out there. You can go to, you know, one of the difficult parts is, of course, there isn't a centralized repository of all these options, because thankfully there are so many of them opening up all the time and in different ways and in different areas, that trying to keep a list like that would be extremely difficult. But I will point out, there is a website, optionsforeducation.com, Options for Education, which has a list of about, I think, I know the founder, Brittany, and I think she has about 400 different options on there. Some of them are more local to her area, which is Oregon, but many of them are nationwide as well. So there are tons of options out there. I think I'll also point out that what you mentioned, Dr. George, in terms of the second part of your question, can people start them? I want to make sure that I emphasize that. Absolutely. Please, you can start this. If you have any interest in, you know, and the time and the inclination to do this, to make a huge difference in your child's life and perhaps other children's lives as well, start a school. You can start an Acton Academy. You can start Prenda. You can start a school that doesn't have one of those titles. Most of the people I've interviewed about this topic have just started their own schools because they realized and they recognized the problems with the current system. So oftentimes they started just with their own kids, you know, maybe one, two, three of their own kids. And then others joined because they saw what was happening there and they were so desperate to get out of the system, to be treated like human beings again, that they were looking around for things. So you absolutely can start your own. And obviously it depends on the area in which you live, you know, what kind of hoops you might have to jump through or not. Thankfully, in some areas, they're relatively free about this. But a lot of times what parents can do is just register your kids as homeschooled. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to homeschool. But what that does is it enables you the freedom to then not go to the government school. So whatever you do besides that, whether you want to pick out one of these micro schools or whether you want to do homeschooling part of the week and maybe go to a co-op another part of the week, which is a popular option for those of you who aren't, who don't know about that. It's basically oftentimes these co-ops are just groups of homeschool families who get together maybe one day or 2 days a week. And we'll often have like social time during that time. They might bring in people from the community to teach lessons. You know, maybe they'll bring in somebody who's a woodworker to teach the kids about woodworking. And so again, like things that would be nearly impossible in a government school to, you know, be able to arrange. So that's something that you can easily do. So it's really about figuring out first, and because I kind of put the cart in front of the horse here, the most important thing that I would recommend to people is you have to know your kids. And you know, I think maybe that sounds obvious, but I don't want to insult anybody, but from my experience, I do think that a lot of parents, because of the traditional system and what we've discussed up to this point, it also removes the independence of the parents and makes them dependent on the school for raising their kids. I mean, look, come on, these kids are getting like breakfast and lunch at school. Like, come on, really? You as a parent, that is, you have a primary responsibility to take care of your kids. You can get them breakfast. You can get them lunch. The state does not have to do that for you. So you can definitely take some responsibility for your kids. And so one way that you can do that in terms of education is talk to them, understand them, figure out how they learn, go on a walk, you know, go down to a local park and walk and see what's your kid interested in. You know, is he or she asking a lot of questions about trees and butterflies? Okay, well, that tells you something, right? That maybe, you know, is your child more tactile? Is your child, you know, a kinesthetic learner, learning through motion? And once you figure that out, how your child actually learns, now you can start to look for options that are going to be geared towards your child. And notice what we're talking about here is exactly the opposite again of what happens in government school, right? Everybody has to get forced through that same, you know, round peg through the square hole. nobody's asking about your interests. I mean, outside of, you know, because we're trying to seem like we're nice people, but it's not like that has any bearing on the curriculum or what we're going to do with you. It's going to be the same, right? Regardless of what your interests are, who the heck cares? You're just a number. But when you as a parent start to figure that out for your kids, now you can find the options that are going to work best for them. Again, whether that's a, you know, a full-time micro school or whether it's maybe a combination of homeschooling and, you know, something outside of the house. But you have to know your kids first. And so that's what I would say. You know, I know a lot of people out there are very desperate in a good way because they want something different for their kids. And so they want another solution. They want a panacea. But I'm going to tell you, for most people, you can't take a one-size-fits-all system and just replace it with another system that you think is going to do everything else. And, you know, for most people, the way that we learn varies oftentimes from day to day. I mean, especially for kids, come on, as they're growing, as they're developing, their interests are going to change very quickly. And so what worked for them last year or even last week might not work for them this year or this week. And so as parents, we need to be very, very cognizant of those things. And notice what this is also doing is getting us back in touch with our kids. You know, it's not, our conversation isn't just, hey, congratulations on that A on this useless worksheet. It's, no, we're having real conversations about things in the world, about how you learn. I'm actually trying to get to know my kids as individuals, not just as students in a government school, right? In terms of what their grades are that, you know, I saw so often as a teacher was the parents were very involved when the kids' grades weren't up to snuff. Well, sorry, parents, but again, let me be a little judgmental. Like, that's not being involved with your kids. Like, yeah, you know, I don't care anymore now that I'm not a teacher. I can say it like it is. But like, in my opinion, anyway, that's not being involved with your kids. Understanding how they learn, and again, finding the best options for them, whatever that looks like. And oftentimes, it is going to be a buffet style, is what I've, you know, what I've sort of come to in my own mind, what I think is probably pretty good for most people, is changing things up like that every now and again, and not just relying on a 5-day-a-week system. So, but again, you have to know your kids. You know, I know that there are a lot of kids out there who do learn pretty well in a more structured system, let's say. But I would caution people that, you know, I think that some of the parents who might fall back on that idea of, oh, you know, my kid loves the structure of school. I mean, in a way, like, I was one of those people. I do like some structure in my life, but I'd at least say, you know what? Why don't you try something different? You know, the government school is not going anywhere. So unfortunately, so, you know, you can always go back there, worst case scenario, but right. Oftentimes we don't even know what we like until we try something different. You know, I think about my wife always tells me that, you know, she loves salmon now. But she didn't try salmon until she was, I don't even know, like in her late 20s or something. So how did she know that she liked it, right? She had to go outside of her comfort zone a little bit and try something different and found something that she really loves now. So I guess, you know, I would say that to parents, don't be afraid to experiment. I know it is frightening and I empathize with you in that because, you know, I think that most parents are well-meaning. And so their first thought is, well, I don't want to mess things up. So let me tell you, please understand, nothing messes kids up more than a government school system. So if you're doing this out of love for your kids and because you really care about them and you're really trying to give them something that hopefully is going to set them on the right path, then whatever you do, doesn't matter, whatever you do is going to be better than what is going to be going on in government school. Trust me on that. After 2 decades, trust me, right? I know that that's a fact. So, you know, I know that because I had parents tell me this, they said, you know, I've been thinking about maybe homeschooling, but I don't know if I could do it. You know, I'm not an expert in this topic. No, stop. All you need to be is an expert in your kids. That's it. And there are plenty of curricula out there. There are plenty of other people out there who are ready to help you. All you need to do is be an expert in your kids. That's it. And there are plenty of options out there. So again, sorry for another very long-winded answer, but I guess the short version of that is, unfortunately, you know, because there are so many out there. There isn't just, you know, there aren't just one or two that are going to fit for everybody. But look in your area. Everyone I've talked to has told me Facebook, for better or for worse, is a great resource. So get on Facebook, you know, other social media platforms, and look for a group in your area. So maybe, you know, type in like micro schools and then your area, or homeschooling and your area. And odds are there's probably a group of parents who are involved in that. So, you know, get in touch with them, ask questions, be inquisitive. And as I said, learn about your kids, learn how they learn, learn what they like, and then try to find options that are going to meet those particular learning styles and those particular interests for your children.
I think what you just described is it just opens up a whole world to people that there's nobody, you know, I like to say there's nobody who cares more about you than you or your parents or God, right? So your parents taking the forefront and having them be your backstop. I did everything. My parents backed me up. If there was some issue, I knew they had my back. It made me really more likely to try things and to succeed or fail. I know that I had them behind me. Children had that as opposed to their peers, which I really wouldn't want to be my backstop. One day they're your friend, next day they're not. But that gives everybody time spent with the child being able to explore without being judged. I mean, I can see all the positives that come from this. No peer pressure, which I think drives a lot of this unhappiness that seem to be pervading our society, and especially in the school system. If you know who you are and you're given the chance, I mean, you won't as a 10-year-old for sure, but moving towards that so that you feel good about yourself, you have a foundation. I think that's a great environment to learn in, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's so important that it's the double-edged sword, right? That we get it's the beautiful part of alternative education. Again, I'm using that very broadly, micro schools, homeschooling, all that stuff that's non-traditional. That's the beautiful part of it, is that it can be individualized, and it should be individualized. I would be very leery of an alternative education option that was telling you, hey, we're basically like a traditional school, except, you know, it's not compulsory. I would stay away from that personally. But that, again, just my opinion. But it's also scary because it's not what most of us know. So there's this unknown element, kind of like I was mentioning before, about why so many parents, I think, have this trepidation about getting out of the government school. Is, yeah, money's a part of it, but I think, you know, maybe for a lot of people, it's just as much that fear of the unknown, that this isn't what I did as a kid, so I don't really know what to expect. And there's so much pressure on parents too for conformity. As you pointed out, Dr. George, there's so much pressure for students, of course, in the system, but there's also so much pressure, especially with social media, for parents to conform. And I think that's why, you know, when I mentioned Facebook before, it's important to, as we say in all aspects of life, surround yourself with people who share your values. And I think that that should go doubly for education. Surround yourself with people who value education in the same way that you do as well, who value their children being individuals, not just members of or cogs in this machine, but figuring out who they actually are. And so, yeah, I think that all of these options are so exciting because they give parents and children the opportunity to not only spend more time together and to be truly involved with each other, but to develop as individuals. And I am putting parents in there as well. They, you know, can developing all in terms of how we're relating to our kids, what kind of parents we are, how we're going to respect their own autonomy and ask them these questions. I mean, not that, you know, as I'm sure your audience can tell, I'm fairly judgmental, so I don't mind saying this either. But, you know, for example, like I see a lot of parents in my neighborhood, and I live on a very short cul-de-sac. It's not very long, but, you know, have to walk down to the bus stop at the end of the road with their kids every day. Well, oftentimes they don't even walk. They just drive, you know, the 300 yards down to the bus stop. And then on the way home, sometimes I'll see some parents walking back with their kids. It's a nice day. And they're carrying the backpacks for these kids. And I think, you know, it's the little things that you do sometimes that send the biggest messages. And I see things like that and I think, how is that helping your child to develop independence and as, you know, a capable human being? You know, what is that doing? And so I think that, you know, I understand, hey, I want to be nice. I want to be, you know, the BFF parent, but what are you doing? Right. I mean, if you're not helping as a parent to develop your child into a fully functioning adult who is truly an individual pursuing his or her individual interests, then what are you doing? Right. Well, in a lot of cases, you're taking the path of least resistance and you're trying to make yourself feel good. Right. And okay, well, that's expeditious, you know, certainly. And we all like to feel good, but sometimes, you know, we have to buck up a little bit and really ask those tough questions about, okay, what am I doing on a daily basis that's helping my child develop that independence and develop into that human being who is going to be not only independent, but also somebody who is, you know, cares about other people and is bringing value to the world, you know, and is not just a cog in a machine or somebody that I can compare, you know, to somebody else in the neighborhood through grades. But how am I helping to foster that? And I think one of the best ways to do that is to get your kids out of the government school system and into a better option. Again, once you, you know, have figured out personally how they learn and what they like to do, which option is going to be the best one for them. I think that's a great way to do that. And as I mentioned, a nice byproduct of that is generally families become a little bit more close-knit because through that process, you really have to, right? You really have to get to know each other a little bit better and in a deeper way than I mentioned, just, you know, hanging a report card up on the refrigerator.
I couldn't have said it better. I think that is what we should all strive for. I think it would make us a stronger society. If we know who we are, we can't be defined by other people who don't know us. And especially if they're trying to control us or in some way make us less worthy. On that note, please tell people how they can read your Substack and follow what you write.
Sure. I write weekly at mentallab.substack.com. And I write on a variety of topics there, not always education, but I do have many educational articles there, as well as some links to some interviews that I've done on YouTube. I do have a YouTube channel too. It's a Learning Liberty on YouTube. You can see some of the interviews with a lot of the people who represent some of the schools about which I've spoken today, including Prenda and Acton and some other individual schools. I've talked to some homeschoolers as well. So if you are interested in getting some more information about any of those options and just hearing from, you know, people who have gone through this journey outside of traditional school, I'd encourage you to take a look at some of those as well.
Mrs. Tritel, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. It was a great conversation. I think you gave a wealth of information for parents, grandparents, students who are looking for an alternative and something that's going to help them thrive. So again, thank you for joining me. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Well, Dr. Giorgio, it was my pleasure as always. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.